We have two incredible paranormal experts tonight, Ross Allison and David Weatherly. They have each written books on their own, but they've also written them together as well. And tonight we're going to talk about their latest work called Haunted Prisons. Oh boy, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. First, let me introduce our first of two guests tonight. Ross Allison has spoken to thousands of students at hundreds of colleges and universities throughout the United States on his ghost hunting adventures, teaches a class on how to become a ghost hunter at the University of Washington and Tacoma Community College. He lectures, and they have taken him to such faraway locations as London, Canada, Scotland. And he's got a number of books. We'll mention a few of them, but he wrote one with David Weatherly, whom I'll introduce in a second, called Haunted Prisons. Ross, by the way, will be one of our featured guests in our September 25th Everett, Washington event. So I'm looking forward to meeting Ross there. David Weatherly, of course, one of our dear friends, is a Renaissance man of the strange and supernatural. He has traveled the world in search of mysterious monsters, ghosts, magic, folklore, and legends. From the dusty castles to strange remote islands to ancient sites, he has journeyed to the most unusual places on the globe seeking the unknown. Let's introduce Ross first of all. Ross, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to meeting you in September.
I know. It's going to be fun.
Yep, that's going to be a good time. Let's bring in David Weatherly. David, my black-eyed kids expert, how you doing?
Good evening, George.
Good to see
you. Good to speak with you.
You know, I knew both of you were prolific authors on your own, but I didn't realize until I started getting into your works how many great books the two of you have written together. David, how long you two been together like this?
Oh, gosh. I can't remember. It's been several years now that Ross and I started this haunted series, as we call it. And we've covered a number of topics. We've done haunted toys. We've done haunted ships and lighthouses. We did haunted churches. And we just did haunted prisons, of course, and several more in the works. And it's pretty successful so far. We have made an effort to preserve these stories, you know, many of which would have been lost otherwise, and also along the way to try to get the facts behind some of these hauntings out into the open.
How many books, David, do you think you have out there now? Just you?
I'm somewhere around 30, I think, that are in print.
Wow. And how about you, Ross?
I'm going on 10 books.
And together, how many have you two written?
I think five.
Five now.
Well, we're going to talk about haunted prisons. Time permitting, we'll talk about some of the other ones, haunted churches, too. That's interesting. And what I'll do is I'll direct questions to each of you, but if you both want to jump in, that's fine. And then in our last hour, both of you will be here for phone calls with our incredible listeners. All right?
Sounds good.
Now, let's talk about how did you gear up, David? How did you zoom in on haunted prisons? How did that start?
I blame Ross.
Uh-huh. Your fault, Ross. You did it.
It is. let me tell you, George, this was not a pleasant topic. You know, we've done several of these books so far, and most of them we've really enjoyed researching the ghost stories. A lot of times we get to write about places we've investigated. Sometimes both of us have investigated. And, you know, we came around to, it's always tough to pick which topic to do next. And we've tried to intersperse ones that are less common, like haunted toys, with things that are, of course, more popular. And haunted prisons, honestly, it was a no-brainer from the beginning when we started talking about the series. But when we got down to really working on the book, it was tough to narrow the list down because there are just so many. And we initially started off with a list of that covered prisons, penitentiaries, and jails. And, you know, we quickly realized that we had to pare that down or we were going to have this massive tome, you know.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Ones we had on the list. So we ended up, this one, it's called Haunted Prisons, but it covers prisons and penitentiaries. Basically, the worst of the worst.
How many would you say are included in the book?
Are we somewhere around 30, Ross? I think.
I think 30, yeah.
And that's, as I said, that's penitentiaries and prisons. And really, we ended up with, I think, the worst of the worst, honestly. None of these places are pleasant to begin with. But what we found is that we covered a lot of the well-known sites, of course, like Alcatraz and so forth. But then other locations that you don't commonly hear about, but that are equally as disturbing and haunted.
I've had a list over my career of some of these haunted places. Let me just throw them out and tell me if you went to some of these places. You ready?
Yeah.
Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia.
Yep. I was one of the first teams to investigate that place.
As you mentioned, Alcatraz.
Yes. Yep.
Ohio State Reformatory.
Yep.
Yes.
Man, you're hitting all the big ones. Ohio Penitentiary.
Yep. Yeah, Ross did that one. I haven't done that one.
Maxwell Street Police Station in Chicago.
I've been there. I haven't investigated it.
Lake County Jail in Indiana.
Yeah, it's on my list.
My gosh. One in Council Bluffs, Iowa. I can't even pronounce the name. Pottawatomie or something like that.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one. Yeah.
I haven't
done that one.
West Virginia Penitentiary.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Wyoming Territorial Prison. I might be giving you some new leads. And the Missouri State Penitentiary in Jefferson City, Missouri.
Yes.
Okay, well, we got a lot of ground to cover then with all these places. What makes these prisons haunted? Have inmates died there? Is that what happened?
Well, there's all kinds of different reasons, you know. There's a situation where I've always brought up the fact that you have to understand that prison life becomes some of these men's full-time life.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they have the opportunity to get parole, they will do all kinds of things to mess it up because they don't know what life is or can't survive outside of prison. And so this has been their life cycle. And so I think even after death, there's that needing to remain in this territory that you understand that even for some, they have control over.
Remember the movie Shawshank Redemption?
Oh, yeah.
Close to the end, they let Brooks out, and the poor guy didn't know what to do with himself. They put him in a little tiny apartment, and I think he hung himself, and he, you know, scratched up there in the top. Brooks was there or something like was here or something like that, but these folks get attached to these prisons. They're fed every day. They have a bed, and they don't have to really worry about anything.
Yeah. And then for some, too, they become a mob boss in the prison.
Right.
So this is where you have your power. And sometimes even after death, they want to hold on to that power.
Were some of these places that somebody died there from electric chairs or some form of a death penalty?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
You've got the death penalty, but you also have murder, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Guys are just killed by other inmates.
What did you find? Go ahead.
You have to think of some other factors, too, George. We're talking about why these places are so haunted. You're looking at locations that are, you know, contained emotion. You talked about these people that some of which have lived out the rest of their lives behind these walls. And in a lot of these older prisons, they were constructed of limestone. Now, you mentioned Missouri Penitentiary, and that one was built from limestone. There's a theory in the paranormal that limestone is something that is conducive to creating paranormal activity. And we could, you know, go into the possibility of the stone tape theory, that limestone records traumatic events, emotional energies, basically creates a recording of a ghost. So, you know, as Ross said, when you're looking at a institution that becomes a way of life for many of these people, and it really is sort of a subculture. I mean, they develop their own language, their own structure of control, you know, amongst the prisoners and the guards. And it's sort of bizarre when you delve into this and start understanding that, you know, behind those walls really is a different world.
Did you feel, in any of these places you both were at, did you feel tension or being scared or anything unusual there?
Well, they're disturbing places for sure. You know, a lot of these prisons,
West Virginia, the Moundsville Pen, is a good example. I mean, that place, first of all, from the outside, it's imposing. You know, it looks like a castle. But once you're inside, you feel this tension in the air that is from pretty much the moment you walk through the gate and inside the place. And obviously, there are areas that it's more concentrated and more tense. But I think a lot of these locations, yes, once you're behind those walls, you feel the difference. You feel like you're in a very different place. And for me, you know, it feels like a place that, you know, you just don't belong and you're not wanted by whatever's there.
How did it feel leaving these spots?
Well, I have to say, for me, you know, just recently, after writing about Brushy Mountain Prison, and I was just there a few days ago, there is that intense negativity in the air, and you can feel it, especially now knowing more details about this prison. That energy just is more intensified, and so there is this element where you're kind of glad to escape and get back to the real world, just thinking about some of the horrible things that happened in these prisons. Because, like, you know, David said, this is the worst of the worst. And even for Brushy Mountain Prison, that was indeed the worst of the worst. This is the prison that took all the prisoners that the other prisons couldn't handle.
Have the guards talked about these spirits and ghosts and these hauntings?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. We've had quite a few interviews with a lot of the guards that have had their own personal experiences, and we include that in the book.
That's got to be unnerving for them to work there and, you know, be alone and something like that happens.
And it's also, too, not, you know, just talking about the hauntings in some of these prisons. You're talking about guards that experienced some of the worst situations that have happened in these prisons, that have lived to tell about, you know, being imprisoned themselves during raids.
Was this an easy book or a difficult book to put together and research?
It was difficult. It was difficult in the sense that, you know, people always ask me what if I'm afraid of anything when it comes to the paranormal because of a lot of the things I've investigated and written about. And, you know, my answer to that is always, you know, what I find frightening or disturbing is what humans can do to other humans. And when you delve into this topic area, you know, we had to research the history of these places and, you know, in many cases learn about at least some of the criminals that were behind bars there. And it's disturbing material. It honestly is.
I do have to say that, you know, while we were working on this book, there were many late night calls to one another just having to, you know, vent a lot of this horrible things that we just learned about these prisons.
Oh, my God.
It's just
like
gut-wrenching. Right.
Were you concerned that you were going to bring any of this home with you in terms of these spirits?
I wasn't. I always take personal precautions, you know, when I go to these places, and I've never had an issue with that.
And I think for me, whenever I go into any place and do an investigation, it's all about carrying a level of respect. So I'm not one of those ghost hunters that likes to go in and taunt the spirits and provoke them. I just go in and offer them an opportunity to hopefully, you know, speak if they wish to speak. So I think by carrying that level of respect, I'm not putting myself in a situation where something would probably want to follow me home because they're angry at me for whatever reason.
And we talked about the prison guards sensing this and seeing things. What about the other inmates? Did they pick up on these things?
Oh, sure. They're former inmates who, you know, still talk about the locations they were confined in being haunted. And it's interesting, you know, because you guys were talking earlier about this concept that a lot of times prisoners, you know, it becomes their way of life and they can't really let go even after they're freed. And what's kind of fascinating is that there are a surprising number of former prison guards who are still attached to the site in some way. You go to some of these locations, which of course are now historic locations and offer tours and so forth, and very frequently you will find people who were former prisoners and prison guards now conducting tours at the site or running a museum, you know, at the site. And that's kind of strange because I think in a sense there's a part of them that they haven't completely let it go. Maybe just because it was their life for so long, you know, working in that prison as a guard. But it makes you wonder exactly what kind of attachments these types of locations create for people.
We've got a lot of prisoners that listen to our show. They're probably all going, oh my gosh, I wonder if the place I'm in is haunted. Because most of these ghosts had lived very evil lives, I mean, they did horrible things to get in prison in the first place, were these spirits evil or mean? Did they do mean things?
Well, I think, we talk about these people that have done horrible things. And, yeah, there is that mentality that they can get away with whatever they want to get away with now that they're on the other side, per se. So now you're dealing with a situation where, yeah, I think there's a lot of times that these entities have been known to attack people to this day. There's been quite a few attacks, scratches, you know, being pushed, being bitten by things that you just can't explain.
We're with Ross Allison and David Weatherly. Their websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and we're talking about their latest book called Haunted Prisons. But they've written a number of other books together, including Haunted Toys that came out in 2017. There was a one called Haunted Ships and Lighthouses that came out in 2018. Haunted Churches came out in 2020. And the Paranormal Files came out in 2019. Pretty prolific, you folks. Pretty prolific indeed. Ross?
Don't try. No, sorry. It's been an amazing adventure working with David. One of the things that I've always been pursuing is trying, as he had said, get these stories published because, you know, once we're gone and a lot of these teams are gone, the stories are gone as well. So publishing is forever. But I also really treasure our friendship and the fact that we both have no problem debunking a lot of these stories as well. If there's in our research, we'll come across a lot of these stories that are just fabricated just for the tale of a tale.
So you just don't accept every story you hear.
No. We'll proudly put it in the book and put the facts straight.
Well, that's pretty good. And when we come back after the break, I want to talk about some of these prisons and some of the things you experienced and what's been going on there. Some of the prisons are shut down, aren't they, David?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them are shut down. There are still a few that are active facilities that are haunted. Probably the most famous example of that would be Folsom Prison, and we can talk a little bit about that.
That's the one where Johnny Cash sang a song, right?
That's right. Yeah, made it famous.
Of the ones that are shut down, are they open for tours or not?
Most of them.
Most of them, yeah, most of them.
They are? Who gives the tour? Some haunted company?
Like David said, tour guides tend to be old prison inmates and guards.
That's interesting. All right, well, stay with us, you two, and then you'll tell us when we come back after the break where we can get Haunted Prisons and the rest of your other books. Time permitting, we'll talk about David's The Black Eyed Children and also their haunted toys, and it's an amazing story. But up next, let's talk about some of these haunted prisons. And the first one we're going to talk about, of course, is in Pennsylvania. It's called the Holmesburg Prison. What the heck is going on there? Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Ross Allison and David Weatherly as we talk about haunted prisons right here on Coast to Coast AM. So get ready to make the call. We'll also take a moment to talk about haunted toys, black-eyed children, and jump aboard with those as well. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Ross Allison, David Weatherly. Again, their websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're talking right now about their latest work called Haunted Prisons. And David, where do you get that book? I assume Amazon and all over the place?
Yes, Amazon.com is the best place to get it. There's also links to our websites. You can go directly to the purchase page for it.
Okay, Holmesburg Prison in Pennsylvania. It's a closed prison now. Tell me about this.
Well, Holmesburg was actually considered the worst prison in America. Now, it closed in 95, but it was actually built to mirror Eastern State Penitentiary, because Eastern State had become this huge, successful prison, especially when it came to solitary confinement. So it opened up back in 1896. Now, there is a couple really famous instances that took place here. One actually takes place in Klondike. Now, Klondike is their solitary confinement. And these were 9x5 cells. They shared a toilet and sink, and this is actually known as a hopper. So you got the toilet below and the sink right above that. Now, what happened was in August of 1938, a few prisoners were actually put into Klondike. And this is known as the bake oven deaths or the Klondike killings. And what happened is four men were basically convicted, kept from, sorry, I lost my train of thought here. So basically they were put into these the Klondike cells, and they were actually tortured to death because in these cells, they actually had radiator heaters in them. And the guards decided to turn them up.
They cooked these people.
They basically cooked them to death. Yes, one man was actually screaming to be shot and killed. Another man was basically busting his head against the wall, trying to kill himself. They said that they became delirious. They started calling out to their mothers. Others had passed out because they couldn't breathe. Now, there was a lack of drinking water. In fact, the only water that was available was in the hoppers. So, and these were only flushed once a day. So depending on the time of the day, you were left to drinking your own sewage just to try and survive this. Yeah. So the men slowly cooked to death. Basically, they said that it reached about 200 degrees, so it was 12 degrees below boiling. Yeah. Now, 14 members of the prison staff were accused, but they pleaded that they were only following directions.
What did they say? The warden told them to do that?
Yeah, basically, yeah. So two of the officers were actually found guilty, and they were given 3 years in prison.
That's all?
Now, yeah, that's it. Now, after those four men's death, you think, oh, that's probably the worst that could have happened there. But no, it gets even worse. Because this prison is actually most known for the voluntary research that they did on the prisoners. We're talking chemical experiments, surgery experiments were done on these men. They were basically treated as lab rats for pharmaceutical companies and even for the government.
My gosh.
Yeah. One former prisoner actually agreed to have layers of his skin peeled off his back. Some cell blocks were actually subjected to kung fu flu, poison ivy, poison oak for chemical warfare. Testing drugs for mind control was done on these men to the point where they didn't even know who they were or where they were at. Surgical operations were done where basically they put dead organs, they'd basically surgically implant dead organs on the backs of these men to see if they could be rejuvenated. Yeah. So at that time, there were no laws against these scientific experiments on humans. And it became a popular thing for the inmates because they were making good money, because they could be paid from $1 to $300 a day, depending on how severe the experiment was. And in Philadelphia, they had a law that basically stated if you could pay 10% of your set bail amount, you could get out of prison earlier. And so this was a big incentive for these men. So it wasn't until the practice was stopped in 1974. But then again, the prison closed in 95. So this was definitely a very interesting prison. And again, this also goes into the fact that, me and David came across all these gruesome stories.
Oh, my gosh.
We haven't even gone into the hauntings in some of these prisons.
I was going to say, in this case, what was a haunting? What happened there?
Well, you have the Terror Dome. And this is actually like it mirrors Eastern State Penitentiary. So if you're not familiar with Eastern State Penitentiary, this is where all the hallways of the prison cells connect into one center ring. So they did the same thing with Holmesburg. Now, this in the center, they actually built this huge dome. And they say that if you walk into that prison, they have what they call the Holmesburg feeling. As we had talked about, that eerie feeling that you, once you walk in this place, you feel that dread, that negativity. And they say you feel that in that Terror Dome. You actually will hear cells' doors slamming shut, guys screaming. You'll hear the walking of boots down the halls. But they also say that if you visit the spot where the old Klondike used to be, you will actually smell flesh baking.
Gosh.
Cooked flesh. Yeah.
What about Moundsville Prison in West Virginia? What happened there?
Well, that's quite a place. You know, that's known as one of West Virginia's most haunted locations, George. And we mentioned earlier, you know, it looks like a castle from outside. I mean, it's this massive, imposing complex with towers on the ends. And it was constructed. They actually started construction in 1867 on that site. It wasn't completed until 1876.
And it was open for like 129 years, wasn't it?
It was. And throughout its history, you know, so many different things happened there. At one point, it was known as the Khan's Prison because security became so lax that they said the convicts would go in and out of the prison as they pleased. They would wander around. They would go out around town and then go back inside at night. Now, that's a far cry from the early history of the prison, because in the beginning stages, it was a brutal place. You know, it was overcrowded, as a lot of these facilities are or were at the time.
A lot of inmates to escape committed suicide, didn't they?
Yeah. It was also a location where there was a lot of prisoner abuse. You know, there were various types of torture that were used. And in the history of many of these early penitentiaries, this was very common. You know, people are appalled to think about it now, but, you know, it just wasn't regulated back during those times. And once someone was locked away behind those walls, you know, the guards, some of them sometimes very sadistic people, and, you know, there was as much to worry about from the guards as there were or from other inmates at times. Places like this, you know, things like homemade weapons were very common. Factions quickly divided. You know, by the time we hit the 1970s, you see in the history of a lot of these penitentiaries that the gang problem that was so such an issue in America in general, it was going on behind the walls of prisons too, because these gangs, many of their members would end up in the same facility and they would quickly try to take control behind the walls of the prison. So, you know, over the years, you've got all of these different things that happen. And of course, inmate on inmate violence. Now, in Moundsville, there's probably one of the most famous stories involved a man named Red Snyder, who became friends with another prisoner whose last name was Lassiter. And they were in the high security area of the prison, and they were such good friends that at one point the guards would often let the two of them take their recreational time together and so forth. But then one day Lassiter came out of his cell, went over to Red's cell, pulled out a homemade shank and stabbed him multiple times, stabbed him to death.
Like he was
right
possessed
in
or
the
something.
Doorway of his cell. Just yeah. I mean, and and of course, when we look at the hauntings at Moundsville, that is one of the hotspots that we find in that site, because many people have had experiences in that cell. Now, one of the interesting things with this particular haunting is that Red Snyder had a very defined speech. He had an accent. He had a raspy voice. And, of course, people who worked in the facility were well familiar with what he sounded like.
Uh-huh.
And there have been EVPs captured there that people say, no, that definitely is his voice. You know, people who knew him when he was alive.
It was Red.
There were people who worked at the facility who claim that they've heard his disembodied voice around that cell. And that's just one singular thing at Moundsville, because the place is so notoriously haunted. As I stated earlier, you can go in almost any part of it and there's activity. There's an area of the prison that's called, I think, a disturbing nickname, the Sugar Shack.
Yeah.
And this was a large room where the guards basically gave the inmates free rein. They would let them in. The stories say that all kinds of illegal activity went on. There were of course fights and stabbings.
And they just let it happen.
There were rapes. There were drug deals. There was gambling. All these things were going on in the Sugar Shack, and that's a really creepy room to be in. Even now, you go in there, and
you can sense it.
Many people have reported disembodied voices and phantom and any range of things.
Next up, New Mexico, the penitentiary there. What's happening?
Well, New Mexico was built in the 1956. It was constructed to hold 900 men. However, by the 1970s, the facility was overcrowded with well over 1,200, and also was underfunded, understaffed. And dorms that were designed to sleep about 50 men were filled with over 100.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty bad. In fact, many of these men would do whatever they could to entertain themselves, like toilet wine. If anybody's ever heard of that, that's where they actually make wine in the toilets.
Oh my God! And they drank that stuff.
Yes, they drank it. Anything to get a buzz, I guess. But they said that a lot of times these guys would get so drunk that this would lead into horrible fights. They'd have the breakouts, and of course, even gang rape was a common thing at this prison. Now, to maintain control over a lot of these overwhelming numbers of inmates, the prison guards developed a system that they called the snitch jacket. And that was just a system that basically allowed the prisoners, or they would force the prisoners or manipulate the prisoners to snitch on each other. And so this basically turned inmates on inmates. So no one knew who to trust with anything. So what happened was on February 2nd, 1980, this is actually just a few weeks prior to the riots, members at Cell Block 5 was actually under construction. Now, these were considered the most dangerous prisoners in the prison. So what they did was, since the prison was already overcrowded, they put all these dangerous criminals into a dormitory setting. Well, this made it very easy for them to take over the prison. And in fact, that is exactly what they did. So in a situation where there was 1,157 inmates under the watch of only 15 guards that night, they were able to take over this prison very quickly. Now, there was a group called the Death Squad, and they had actually plotted their own personal revenge on the snitches, where a lot of people thought...
And they were inmates? They were inmates within the prison system?
Yes. And so basically what they wanted to do is get a hold of these snitches, and all these snitches were basically in Cell Block 4. Which housed about 96 prisoners, I believe. This included a lot of the mentally ill, convicted sex offenders, and basically the infamous snitches as well. So the squad was able to obtain keys, but unfortunately these keys did not get into the cell block, or actually into the cells themselves. So luckily, since they were doing all that construction on Cell Block 5, they found blow torches.
Oh.
So they were able to burn through to get into cell block 4. Then they had to go through each individual cell and burn through to get into those cells. So could you imagine these men knowing that their time is up? Because once these guys get through that cell door,
they're gone.
You know, they're gone. And that's exactly what happened. These guys basically went through each cell and they tortured these men. They hung them. They burned them alive. They said most of the bodies were so mutilated that they were unrecognizable.
Stay with us, guys. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and finish up on that, talk about some more prisons. We'll get into Alcatraz, talk a little bit about your Haunted Toys book. David, you can give us an update on Black Eyed Children. Are they still showing up at people's doors? And, of course, we'll take phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We will be right back.